chapter 5, Sutra 41. The revealed scriptures are the rays of the sun of divine knowledge. Summary of Srila Bhaktivedanta Thakur's commentary. The divine knowledge is compared to the sun, and all the scriptures are rays of that sun. The God-given self-evident knowledge of the jivas is the source of all the scriptures. The sages have received this self-evident knowledge from the Supreme Lord and recorded it for the benefit of the jivas. This recorded portion of this primeval knowledge has been manifest in the form of the Vedas. The Vedic teachings are of two types. So you see that this knowledge is being revealed, it's knowledge that's being revealed to the jivas. Right? That's what's documented in the Veda. Because we have to understand is that that's the only knowledge we can understand. As jivas, we can't understand knowledge that, let's say, the internal potency would understand, or the external potency, or Krishna himself. Right? So it's knowledge that's revealed to the jivas, because that's what we'll understand. Does that make sense? So from our perspective, that's enough. It doesn't need to be more. Does that make sense? Because that's all the more you can understand anyway. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, God-given self-evident knowledge. So the great sages, then they have taken this and recorded it. So that is what has been manifest in the form of the Vedas. Right? The Vedic teachings are of two types. In the Mundaka Upanishad 1.1.4.5, it is said, enlightened souls say there are two kinds of knowledge. One, transcendental knowledge, and two, material knowledge. The knowledge of the Rig, Yajna, Samana, and Atharva Veda is material knowledge. The study of phonetics, rituals, grammar, etymology, meter, and astrology are all material knowledge. The transcendental knowledge is the knowledge that brings one to the imperishable Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, that material and spiritual knowledge, that's what's revealed in the Vedas. So the Vedas themselves technically is called material knowledge. Right? Because it can be used materially. Transcendental knowledge is how to use, how to engage oneself by using the Lord's energy in the Lord's service. That's transcendental. You understand? That's the actual. Means you also have the element, you can call it transcendental, where you're describing the nature of the soul and it being transcendental to the material world. But in practical application, one is only situated transcendentally when that is engaged in the Lord's service. Does that make sense? Because only devotional service situates the jiva eternally in the liberated platform. Otherwise, it's temporary. Does that make sense? Otherwise, why are we here? Right? The jiva falls from the transcendental position. Why? Because he's not situated in pure love. Right? And if he elevates himself through the process of jnana, he'll get again to that liberated platform and again fall down because he's not situated in love for Krishna. So once he's situated in love for Krishna, then he won't fall. Does that make sense? So, therefore, that understanding of the position of the soul is good for understanding the position of liberation. But in actuality, only when it's seen in relationship to devotion, that will keep the jiva on the transcendental platform eternally. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Can you raise again this idea of jiva falling down?
The jiva falling down.
Yeah, the fall down of the jiva.
Means that that's already, isn't that already established as a fact? We're here. You have a doubt if we're actually here or not. You know, you like the two people next to you, so you're not really willing to pinch yourself because they might disappear.
The idea is that only if we have love of God, then we can be established there permanently.
Yes.
But means when we were there originally.
Yeah, well, that's the meaning of tatastha.
So
we as an energy are what's in between the internal and the external, though we're part of the internal. Does that make sense? You know, just like you have the beach, and the ocean. I mean, you have the land and you have the ocean, right? The beach is in between, right? Because when the water runs over it, you know, that little bit of water after the wave hits and then it runs up the beach, that point where there's water there, do you call that the ocean or the dry, the land? Yeah, but it's a beach, but it has water, you know? You know, say, so that's the beach, that's what we are. But we're connected to the land. You know what I'm saying? So the jiva is connected to the internal potency, but we're the beach. So that means you're in the neutral state, which means liberated, but neither materially absorbed nor devotionally absorbed. Does that make sense? And then you're given the choice. So we're the losers. We pick this side, right? But according to statistics, 9 out of 10 choose prema, but 1 out of 10 thinks playing with the material energy looks interesting.
But where do we choose it?
Where? Means you simply have to take, if we're here and we see how Krishna's in everything, what's the effect that we get from the situation we're in? Spiritual or material? We're here, situated in the material energy, right? Or let's say the external energy. We see everything in relationship to the Lord. So spiritual, but we're situated in the external energy. So in the same way, if you're situated in the internal energy, but you don't see it in connection with the Lord, you're actually, the effect is that of the material energy. It's the same person. It goes both ways. You know, we have trouble enough seeing it the one way, let alone seeing it backwards. But you can see it, if you can understand that, then you understand how you're here. Right? Example being the demons. They're in Vrindavan. They're interacting with the cowherd boys who are purely transcendental, and Krishna are walking into his mouth, Agasura. But where is he situated? He's situated, you could say, in the spiritual world, but actually, in effect, where is he? Material world. So that's how it is. You see the place in relation to Krishna, then it acts like spiritual, so you develop love for Krishna, and then you are eternally situated there. Well, you could say is you're not situated in your spiritual form, in the spiritual energy. So from that you can say it's a fallen, because the consciousness is fallen. So when we talk about fallen, we mean consciousness, because someone can be here and they're still physically here, but we'll say they're not fallen because the consciousness is there. So when we say fallen, we specifically mean the consciousness, not the situation of where you are. You know what I'm saying? We'll take it by time and space to mean a location. And then you have to fall all the way like this, you know? Like that. But actually, it's in the same place. You know what I'm saying? We're sitting here and, you know, may or may not be appreciating the Dham. And Lord Chaitanya's eternal associates, they're here doing their pastimes and kirtan and everything. So we're technically in the same place. But we're seeing the material, and they're not. So we're here, and they are there, even though we're in the same place. Does that make sense? So that's why technically only we can catch this, the Gaudiyas. The other Sampradayas, they don't bother with it. And Prabhupada also said, don't bother with it, because unless that makes sense, it doesn't have any meaning. Then we'll always go on, but how can there can be no lust in the spiritual world? It says, you know, what about Dravida Gorilla? You know, there's no lust there? You know, or what about all those demons? There's no lust there? But they're in the spiritual world. Oh, but that's Gokula. Well, what's the difference between Gokula and Goloka? That's the point. So unless one can see, Goloka and Gokula are non-different, and the Lord's potency is one. Yeah, echad, right? It's one. You know, so therefore, then in that situation, it can act as internal or external. Right? The energy is one, but it manifests as internal. The manifestation is internal, or the manifestation is external. Right? So that's all together. If you can have all that going on in your brain at once, all these contradictions, it makes sense. And if it can't, then we'll get into the detail and argue over it for... I know somebody who still can't quite adjust with ISKCON, because for the last almost 30 years, they have a problem with this point. Right? Does that make sense? We're done? Okay, good. 5 minutes instead of 2 weeks. Yeah.
We're progressing.
Yes. Progressing. You understand? Because of the training, is that most don't train with this elements of these last chapters of Gita. Because that's where you start to be able to see all these things at once. The material and spiritual are side by side. That's why Ishapanishad is saying they should be studied side by side. Because actually they are. You know, it's just a matter of how you see. Now, for those who see materially, they're only given this area to be able to see material. But as we saw before, material is atoms. You know, homogeneous atoms of this, you know, the pradhan, it's spread, it's everywhere. But it manifests here. Just like the spiritual is everywhere, but it manifests there. Does that make sense? So it's simply, it's not a matter of time and space. Right? Time is the element that the living entity interacts with the external nature. Right? Because it's not conscious. Does that make sense? Yeah.
It's only a question of interaction.
It's only a question of interaction. That's all it is. The yogic Brahmins are standing there. The wives are right next to them. Krishna's outside the door. So how does it work out for both of them? One is glorified on the topmost transcendental platform, and the other guys, they blew it. Right? They responded on the material platform. But they're in Braj, they're in the spiritual world. Those yogi Brahmins live there in the spiritual world. You have a doubt? They live in the material world, but their wife is right next to them. But the whole point is that's the point, because they see a material, it's there. But the point is they're there. They're in the manifest pastime. So many, like when you're on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Krishna's there, right? Arjuna's there, like that. The Pandavas are there. A few other, the great devotees are there. But, you know, most people who are there are not necessarily devotional. Probably at least not the guys that are running at Satyaki with the rocks. You know, it's definitely not some cave somewhere off, you know, which continent they came from, I'm not sure which they went, or it is, but. Yes.
Maharaj, you said the pradhan manifests here as atoms?
No, the pradhan is atoms. But the pradhan means the various kinds of atoms that there are homogeneous. That's what makes it pradhan. When it is when the Lord glances over the pradhan, so that the living entities, time and the jivas enter, right, false ego, then it separates the atoms and you get mahatattva, right? Then the primary creation is where the blueprints for creation are made. What is the 8,400,000 species of life? What are all the situations of life? What are all the actions that can be formed? What are all the reactions that can be formed? You know, what are all the goals that can be had? What are all the identities you can have? All that's created, right? It's in its subtle form. But that's the Lord in his internal potency, right? Then Brahma takes the atoms from the Mahatattva and creates all these different things of the world according to the blueprint, right? So he's the engineer.
And what is the connection then with this Sandini potency?
What's the Sandini potency? Sandini becomes the mode of ignorance here.
So, but in the spiritual world, what are things made out of?
Satchitananda.
Okay.
Krishna Satchitananda, the Jiva Satchitananda, everything is Satchitananda.
Okay.
You understand? Sandini arranges the situations. Some of it arranges the devotees, the interaction of the devotees. Kladini is the resultant ecstasy that comes from that interaction in that situation with the devotees in connection to Krishna for his pleasure. Okay.
Alright, so this question was leading to, is Sandini some kind of substance which could be manifested as Atma?
But it's there, but what is the necessity? It's in the spiritual world. The point is get yourself there, then you can check it out yourself. You can go pick it up, look at it, you know.
Bring the microscope.
Yeah, you can do all that when you're there. But, you know, until you get there, what does it matter? Point is, it's the Sarup Shakti. Right? The Sarup Shakti means it's all these energies. Then there's a manifestation of that. Right? Like Krishna is Atmarama, but there's no manifestation. You know what I'm saying? How big is Krishna? What would be his size?
Unlimited.
Okay. And then how does he fit into Mother Jashoda's house and sits down at the table and takes breakfast?
Because he's Yogeshwara, he has all the mystic.
Yeah, but so what's the point? Why does he manifest in that size?
He's always adequate.
So the pastime.
The pastime. So, but still, that situation and that size and everything, so these manifestations of the Sandini potency, what are they dependent upon?
How the devotee sees him.
How Mother Jashoda sees him as her son, therefore he looks like a son. Right? Like that. When he goes out with the gopis, they don't see him as a son, they see him as a lover, so he manifests like that. You know what I'm saying? So that's the element. You know what I'm saying? The same potency, that same, how you say, the same principle. Krishna smiles at Mother Jashoda. He looks cute. You understand? Boyfriends, when they're interacting, they're not cute. They're handsome. If you're looking at them from one side, they're over there doing something, then they're cute. But when you interact, they're not cute. Little kids are cute. Right? You understand? So it depends upon who's viewing Krishna, how he manifests. Does that make sense? Because the point is what he is, how Arjuna is not able to handle the universal form. So, you know, and he's quite an experienced devotee. Right? And Mother Jashoda is kind of like, wow, seem to have an upset stomach here. That's some strange. You know, so it doesn't mean anything. So it's according to the devotee. So that's what is pleasurable to Krishna, is that interaction between the devotees and the Lord. Right? Because being Aparama is great, but it's, you know, there's so much more pleasure in interaction. You know what I'm saying? So the problem is all these things go beyond our concept of time and space. Because relationship is the actual point. So it's relationship that Krishna is that form. It's a relationship that you're in that form. It's a relationship that you're in a specific realm. You know, in Vaikuntha or Dwarka or Vrindavan. Right? It's because of a relationship or not, you know, that you're here in the material world or in the spiritual world. So it all comes back to relationship. But we somehow or another want to make it into the mechanics of time and space. Right? You know, that's as good as our brain gets. You know, quantum is it. Does that make sense? So that's where the weakness comes from. Yes.
When we hear that Krishna's original form is the form which is in connection with his, you know, highest relationship with Gopi, would that be the case?
With Gopi.
With the Gopis.
With the Gopis. Huh? And I would say, yeah, you say the Gopi would probably be more correct. Same spelling, but different pronunciation.
The question was original Krishna.
So the original form of Krishna, you know, then that will be the form, you know, of his interact. In other words, Braja Krishna interact with Radharani is the original form. Yes. Is that okay? Okay. That's why he comes as Vishnu, because you have to think about it. It has to be exactly on this point. If it's off the point, I'm not going to answer. Okay. See, what we're discussing here is stuff that we talked about last year. This is the second year of a continuing course. So when you ask, you know, second chapter Bhagavad Gita questions, it's a valuable question. It'll be good for you, but everybody else here, it won't be so inspiring for. Seeing that anybody who comes to the class and has never been in it before asks exactly the same questions.
It's appropriate about the religion of Jiva question?
We already answered it. So what's
detail?
Krishna
says, well, the one who comes back to my abode never back to the material world. That
right.
Doesn't mean that for Jiva it's necessary to get in touch with material energy to lose this tendency to go back to the material world.
Is it necessary for him to lose the tendency?
Not necessarily to get in touch with material energy.
To lose it.
To lose this tendency to get.
No, it's just not interesting. It's just a matter of if you find the Krishna to be more, you know, to be more inspiring, then you deal with that. It's just like this. If you have something that can be, it would be like you have, what would be a good example, but you have an item, right? So this item, you can either see its connection to Krishna and use it for Krishna, or get into the item itself and see what you can squeeze out of it for your own experience. So if you see it that you want to use it in connection to Krishna, then that's spiritual. If you want to see what you can get out of it, then that's material. That's all. So you don't have to go somewhere. We make it that the one is over here and the one's on, you know, Golok's over there and material is here. So most people have a problem with this because when they say the Jiva falls, they say he has to fall from Golok. He doesn't have to fall from Golok. Gokul is the spiritual world. But we have a problem with that because we're time and space, you know, bodies. Does that make sense? So we demand that it has to be, well, when? Give me an exact, you know, moment. You know, according to universal time, when would be, you know, it's just all nonsense because we're trying to see spiritual from the material viewpoint and demand that it's that way. It's just like the person who says, well, show me God or I won't believe in him. And we'll say the guy's an atheist. So it's the same point. That's why this isn't a topic for discussion. Because it's either you understand it, or one still is too covered by atheistic tendencies that one can't understand it. That's all. It's that simple. But our false ego doesn't allow us to accept that position. So, no, I'm intelligent. I can understand anything. Therefore, if I can't understand it, it's not understandable. Or it's wrong. No, it's not. You know, you have to take two and two and put it together and get four. You know what I'm saying? When I say demons in Vrindavan, now is material there? They're looking around at Vrindavan. What do they see? The spiritual world? No, they see the material world, something to enjoy. Right? Agasura is seeing a very nice place that he can set himself up and kill Krishna to get revenge for all his other friends who have been killed. Right? That's what material means. You look at the situation and you see it for your own purpose. That's what material means. Spiritual means you look at it and see it for Krishna's pleasure. And then we say, no, but there's the place. That's time and space again. They're the same space. You know, we always say the Lord and his pastimes are going on eternally. Or what do we mean? We mean they're out there doing kirtan right now. But we don't see because we see materially. You understand? So that's the point, is that the jiva can see both, depending upon what he wants to see. You know what I'm saying? Let us say you take a kid. Okay, you have a 16-year-old girl and her 8-year-old brother. Okay? And they're walking down, you know, the main road. Okay? And they go by, let's say, you know, some fashion house. Okay? And there's all kinds of things in the window. Okay? Who will notice those things? The girl. Does the boy care? No, he'll be looking at something else and the car's going by and, you know, somebody with their dog. And he won't even notice that. But is the girl noticing the guy with the dog and the cars going by? No. She's just seeing how she can be involved in that. Right? You understand? Now they keep walking and they go by a toy store. Right? Now, does the girl notice the toy store? No. But does the boy? That's the material and spiritual. It depends upon your taste. You'll see one or the other. It's that simple. So the choice is ours, and we made the choice. That's why we're here. And no one else to blame, because you could have looked at the other shop. Right? Only thing is the toy shop was a trick, yes. But not really toys.
Yeah. Maharaj, would the Upanishads be counted as a transcendental knowledge?
Would the Upanishads be counted as transcendental knowledge, yes.
Even though they are part of the four Vedas.
Yes, means they're where the transcendental knowledge is found. Right? It's not necessarily stories about them are, but it's the transcendental knowledge, yes. The four Vedas we mean here, we mean Samhita.
So it doesn't mean the other parts, the Brahmanas, Arhyankas, not just the Samhitas, the four Vedas,
the Brahmanas are explaining how you use the Samhita for rituals, right? Dharma, application in Dharma, and application in you know, karma. Right? The Aranyakas explain the metaphysics of those rituals. Okay? The Upanishads explain the philosophical. Does that make sense? So three are dealing with the material, one with the spiritual. So, but when you say the Veda, you mean the Samhita itself, because the Upanishads are still based on the Samhita. That's what gives them their authority. Not able to hear. So why do you always sit back there? Isn't that they're supposed to sit on these places during this? You know, in other words, you all sit in the middle. Means the morning class, it doesn't matter because you don't have as much insanity going on. But somehow or another. Now, I'm not sure. I didn't know there was a flute class, but there seems to be. Or he's getting in the last 30 seconds before the class starts. And so, just to be able to express that last little... Okay, so here's the 14 kinds of knowledge. So the Mundaka is explaining those 14. So it was better when it was worse, right? Okay, so here's what you have, the four Vedas, then they're what's considered aparavidya, or material knowledge, right? So here, when the Upanishads are describing material knowledge, they mean that knowledge which is dealing with the material phenomena, or the material, yeah, the material energy, that you can engage in the Lord's service for transcendental elevation, right? Now, when that knowledge is not being dealt with in that way, it's called avidya, right? So both of them are material, but one's progressive and one's not, right? So technically the Upanishads are only interested in that which is progressive, like that. And then the Vedangas are the next ones. Phonetics means how you pronounce the syllables. Rituals, that's kalpa, grammar, vyakarana, etymology, that will be your nirukta, or your vocabulary. Meter will be prosody, or chanda. And astrology is jyotish. So those are the six Vedangas. That's how you know the Veda. Through the language elements, you're able to access the what the Veda is explaining, because it's written in Sanskrit, so through the language you can appreciate that. Then the rituals are performed according to the appropriate times given by astronomy. Like he's put astrology here. It should say astronomy, actually. But it can be either way, you know. Just that you, in other words, it's the whole science of astronomy, because astronomy is actually the main point. Astrology is used because we have our own material elements to consider, right? It means astronomy is, when is Ekadasi, when's Janmashtami, when's an auspicious time in the day that you can perform an activity. That's astronomy, right? Astrology is, you know, when you're going to get rich, you know, when you're going to get famous, when you're going to get powerful, you know, when you'll be liberated, you know, that's what it's all telling, right? Other aspects we won't talk about. Yes.
You mentioned that Upanishads deal or are interested only in apara progressive knowledge.
No, it means they only at best acknowledge apara vidya. Otherwise, as far as Upanishads are concerned, there's transcendental knowledge. That's what I'm saying. This word material knowledge can have two usages. You can either say material knowledge meaning apara vidya or material knowledge meaning avidya. But according to Upanishads, there's spiritual and there's material. You know, so they don't look generously upon the apara vidya as such. And, you know, they're so nice, it's engaging people, and they're progress. No, their point is that you're either transcendentally situated or you're materially situated. Right? Does that make sense? You know. So that's why Bhagavatam is, you know, so much more perfect, because it shows you how anyone can get to that platform. Well, the Upanishads, basically, you have to be quite renounced to be able to take full advantage. I mean, someone who understands can apply it in any situation, but that's the knowledge of the Bhagavatam. Does that make sense? So persons like Lord Brahma, Narad Muni, Vyasadeva, these personalities know that. So that's what they're preaching, the Bhagavad Dharma. But if one doesn't know Bhagavad Dharma, there is, you know, transcendence, or there's the material world.
I remember you describing Upanishadic language. It's like this, that, yat, tat.
Yeah, whenever I've been mentioning this and that, this means here, that means there. Well, that's what it's about. It's about this and that. You're here, which is this, and you're trying to get there, which is that. So, you know, here, there, this, that. That's because it's poetic, but it's like a very intellectual kind of mystical poetics, right? It's not romantic poetics. That's what you'll find in the Puranas and the histories. Like that. But in the Vedas, it's very intellectual poetics. Right? So it's also very, you know, the poetic and, you know, connecting, you know, what do you call those? Metaphorical and all that. But it's intellectual metaphorical as opposed to romantic metaphorical. Because the romantic is trying to make the thing you're talking about sound more interesting by the element of rasa and interaction and the engagement of the senses, while the Upanishads are making it interesting intellectually. Right? There's more things there, so it becomes intellectually. He walks, but he does not walk. You know what I'm saying? You know, then the intellectual gets fired up. You imagine you're telling this girl, it's a really cool guy, you know, you might like him and all that. Well, what's he like? Well, he walks, but he doesn't walk. And it's kind of like, it's not going to work, right? So, but on the intellectual platform, is what do you mean he walks and he doesn't walk? And you know, you're interested. And the other one, you immediately lose interest. You know, but the other one, then if we say, you know, it, you know, his you know, color body is the color of the blue lotus, and his eyes like the, then it has interest, right? So it's a different. That's the difference between the classical Sanskrit and the Vedic Sanskrit. Right? Vedic doesn't mean that it can't create. When it's dealing on the material platform, then it can create that romantic, but it still will be more intellectual. You know? It'll create this very interesting that materially one's attracted, but at the same time it has all kinds of stuff. You know? Like that. So it'll...
If I look at, for example, Jyotish, with the idea of infusion of personal enjoyment, and it falls into avidya.
If it falls into avidya, if it's not engaged in the Lord's service, like somebody wants to get married. So, what is the marriage based on? What are you marrying? Technically, you're marrying the bodies, the gross and subtle bodies. So you're marrying dead matter. Right, sorry if we're not using any poetic here. Right, you're marrying dead matter. do you this pile of chemicals take this pile of chemicals to have and to hold, you know, until death? But you're already dead, so until you know, it becomes a little bit difficult, you know, to express it all. But you know, so they cover it up very nicely. But the point is you're marrying the dead matter that we identify with. But the purpose, now, if the purpose is for one's own emotional and sensual desires, that's avidya, right? But now, if it's for the purpose of, you know, you as a soul and the other person as a soul that are conditioned and want to work cooperatively to get out of that conditioning by working out their material needs in relationship to Krishna, then it's aparavidya. You understand? So that's why we see in the marriage ceremony given by Gopal Bhatta Goswami, there's so much of that level of subtle philosophy in it. Everything, it opens like that. Everything's like that. Like that. But if you look at it from the poetics, then you'll think it's mundane, but it's not. It's describing your attraction you have is actually for Krishna. You think it's for the body. Right? You know, you think that the love stands on its own, but it's Krishna's potency of love, you know, that's coming through, and the jiva's, you know, getting involved, but because he doesn't see it in connection with the Lord, therefore manifests his lust. You know, so these are all the mantras you're chanting during the wedding. You know, but most people don't know. They're just wondering, you know, it's okay, it's a ritual, you get to this, you're married, and Hari Bol. But it's all very, very deep philosophy. You know, that's just the way the Vedas are. They're meant like that, but people will generally take it from the material because it's using the material as the medium for upliftment. Therefore, it's apara. Right? The direct understanding that's not dealing with apara means it's not involved with it, but it's transcendental. Right? That's your transcendental knowledge. It's applied into aparavidya because you have to use it. So that's why you have to know the two side by side. Right? Because the Upanishad doesn't say transcendental and material, it says knowledge and ignorance. Right? So knowledge means transcendental, ignorance means material knowledge. Is that make sense? Okay. Although the Vedic knowledge is self-effulgent and eternal in the course of its journey through the different ages, it became associated with the various qualities of the different writers. In Srimad Bhagavatam 11.14, 3-8, the Supreme Personality of Godhead explains, by the influence of time, the transcendental sound of the Vedic knowledge was lost at the time of annihilation. Therefore, when the subsequent creation took place, I spoke the Vedic knowledge to Brahma, because I myself am the religious principles enunciated in the Vedas. That's why you don't want to say anything bad about the literatures or the rituals, because Krishna is those. Right? Now, which rituals are the most pleasing to interact with him in your situation? That varies. So just because it's not... You know, the cowherd boys are out playing with Krishna, you know, and roughhousing around and stealing each other's lunch and all that, the gopis may think it's stupid. But it doesn't matter. They just don't do that. You know, so they're not looking at that, right? In the material world, you know, when boys watch what girls do for fun, they all say, that's a waste of time. You know, and when girls watch what boys do, is they're going like, are these guys older than 4? You know, like that, you know, so it's like, you know what I'm saying? So it doesn't make sense. But the point is both are valid. So therefore, gopis, when they're looking at how, wow, they can express their affection for Krishna in public, out in the open, in any situation. Aren't they so fortunate? Because we can't. We have to hide. You understand? So the material world will find what we'll call the weakness, and the spiritual world will find what they think is the strength. But it's the same principle. Does that make sense? So he is the religious principles. It's just which ones apply to us those are the ones who follow. What don't apply, we don't have to, it's not that to not follow them, we have to feel bad about them. You know what I'm saying? It's not that, it would be like this, is that we would look at it, okay, that Krishna, I mean, we take, as devotees, then we have to eat, so we want to take Krishna prasad, right? So those things that are unofferable, then those can't be Krishna prasad, so we're not interested, right? So it's just a matter of that. So it's not that because meat is disgusting and, you know, this and that, that's why we are not interested. That's what we have to make our tell ourselves, because we are interested, right? So then we use those techniques. But as far as Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says anything not offered to Krishna is as good as stool, right? So even what we would consider as a malecha edible, he's already said that's as good as stool. You know, so that means anything that's not prasad is stool. So if we want, so it's just a matter, there's no interest. You know what I'm saying? If we're going to use the extreme, then everything's like that. There's Krishna prasad and then everything else. So there's transcendental knowledge and then everything else. Right? Might be. Some of them, yeah. Yeah, especially when you pull out verses like rice without ghee on it is a surek. Not, you know, not so nice, or it's better with ghee. It's a surek.
Yes. Is this how sectarianism comes in, when we see our personal specific situation and then project that onto everybody?
Yes, that's the whole thing. It means that's why there is the general principle, and then there's specific definitions. Right? So the spiritual has just one definition. Material has then all the varieties of the way karma and jnana influence our life. So what elements are our love for Krishna has been imposed imposed on, then that's where we will say that is where love, you know, the guy is out there, you know, somebody's sitting there and very happily playing mahjong or something, and someone else will go, that's stupid, you know, only when you're, you know, jumping off a bridge somewhere with a rubber band tied around your legs, now that's exciting, you know, this is stupid, you know, and the other person would just sit there and look and, oh, there they go again, you know, and stuff like that, idiots, like that. So, you know, that's what's going on. So this is what he's explaining, is that this, it's, yeah.
The first and most intelligent person, they learn by hearing.
Yes.
This person by seeing is, oh, I don't want to steal.
Yeah.
This person, he gets caught, punished, and then doesn't do it again. This person caught, punished, like that. So how come someone, they can understand this, they can understand something by hearing, but still they have to go through.
When he's saying here is you learn, what does that mean, learn? If I sit down and say, okay, first you walk up to the, you know, that tin can with the rubber kind of like wheels on it. You open the door, sit in the side that has the other little funny wheel there, right? If you sit on the other side, it's not going to work. But you sit on the side of the wheel, right? And then by pushing the pedals, then it can go forward and it'll stop. You know, you have this little thing, you move around, it'll change the gears so you can go faster and slower, right? And there's a horn there, you can push on it and honk. Like that, you know, some signals, some wipers if it rains, you know, windows can go up and down. Did we miss anything? The key? All right. Thought we'd just make it simple, right? Yeah, you know, then you have the key. Okay. So you understand that? So can you drive now from that knowledge? No. So that's the difference. When we say learn, we mean realize. So there's hear, understanding, and there's realizing. So some people by hearing can realize. Some people hear, and only by seeing, so they understand, and then realize by seeing. Others hear, they understand. You know, see, understand a little more, but only when they, it happens to them, then they realize. So that's what it means. So there's a difference. That's why jnana and vijnana, there's understanding and realization. So practice, you get realization. Hearing, you only get understanding. That's why the modern academy is weak, because then it's all just by learning some knowledge. But to use it in your life, you know, realization is not part of the modern academy. They don't care if you know it, right? You know what I'm saying? Even in your practical elements, your medicine and these, it's still, you just have to know what the book says and be able to do it. You actually realize what's going on. That's another. The guys that have more realization, they're the guys that, you know, come out with, they get the Nobel Prize, right? But how many of them are there? That's the point. So the Vedic is on realization. So it's considered you haven't learned until you realize. That's why there's practice. Yes.
So those 3 points of realizing, is it conditioning that you're one of those? Are they learning from hearing or hearing and seeing?
Generally it's one's conditioning.
So
you know.
Can you progress just to hearing?
Yeah, by practice and determination, though generally speaking, third class intelligence is pretty common these days. You know, like that.
What would delay this from experiencing fear? Would be attachment, right?
Attachment, yes. So the greater the attachment, the more it drops the intelligence. So if there's an area where you're not attached, maybe by hearing, you know, you're sitting there and you hear a friend and they're telling about how, you know, you see your friend and they got a broken leg, so what happened? And, you know, because they were out skiing or something like that. So right at that point you decide, I'm never going skiing, right? So, you know, but you didn't have an attachment for it in the first place, or possibly for sports or something. So therefore that worked. But some other places you hear and you go through the same thing. You know. Right. Yes? No?
So the ears are filled with the cotton wool of attachment?
Cotton filled with the cotton wool of attachment. The ears filled with cotton wool. Well, no, because you can understand.
Okay.
It means if you can't understand, then you really got a problem. So that means then when it does happen to you, it doesn't have any effect. Because you don't understand. See, the first three, there's understanding. Therefore, there's an effect. There's realization. But if there's no understanding, then even if the effect happens, then there's not going to be any realization. So that would mean that fourth class intelligence, you didn't even understand it. Okay. Lord Brahma spoke this Vedic knowledge to his eldest son, Manu, and the seven great sages headed by Bhrigu Muni then accepted the same knowledge from Manu. Right, so he's spoken this to them, and then he's accepted how he has applied it as the way then he preaches it. That's why Manu Samhita, though the first half of the first chapter is spoken by Lord Brahma himself, and he says, this knowledge I have taught to my all the 10 sons, right? So now Bhrigu here is going to explain it. So Bhrigu speaks for the next 11 and a half chapters. So we're hearing from his son, but that knowledge then is known, you know, there. But it's famous as, so because Manu here can mean Manu meaning Lord Vishnu. It can mean Lord Brahma, right? Or it can mean Swayambhuva Manu. Because we're going to receive it from Swayambhuva Manu. It's his body of knowledge. Right? So then what Brahma is speaking is according to what Swayambhuva is practicing. You know what I'm saying? So therefore we can take it, though, even though Manu is not spoken by Swayambhuva Manu at all. Right? But it's his teaching. Right.
So, actually Manu Samhita, Manu in this connection refers to Lord Brahma?
Depends how you look at it, but it's actually, it's by what Krishna is saying here, it still means meaning Manu, meaning Swayambhuva. Because then Swayambhuva is going to apply it. How he applies it is how Brahma preaches it. You know, just like Vyasadeva, he spoke the Bhagavatam to Sukadeva. And then Sukadeva spoke it, and then that was spoken by Sutta. So that's what Vyasadeva documents. You know what I'm saying? So then Vyasa will be speaking what Sutta spoke, what Sukadeva spoke, what actually he spoke. Does that make sense? So it's the same way. As Brahma spoke to his eldest son, Manu, but then from here, he then, practicing, applying it, that's what then Brahma then speaks. That application. So then here, when we say Manu Samhita, we can mean Swayambhuva Manu. Because when Prabhupada talks about it, he talks about it, so knowledge coming from Swayambhuva. But when you read the literature, Swayambhuva, except for he gets an honorable mention, you know, as the seven Manus, right? And so, but he's not the one speaking. The only ones that are speaking is Brahma and Bhrigu. Does that make sense? But the knowledge that's being spoken is what is how Swayambhuva practices it. Does that make sense? Is here what I'm saying? Yeah.
When Prabhupada translated, he gave us a great focus on bhakti.
Yes.
Do we understand that when someone like Swayambhuva Maharaj Vyasa, they add their style to the absolute, the same truth?
That's what he's saying. Although the Vedic knowledge is self-effulgent and eternal, in the course of its journey through the different ages, it became associated with the various qualities of the different writers. So therefore it'll take on the qualities, because Manu is speaking at how mankind can use the various social necessities to elevate themselves to the platform of Krishna consciousness. But because you're using the social environment to explain Krishna consciousness, you're going to use what word in the philosophy, what would be a synonym in sociology? You know what I'm saying? So the problem is then someone will approach Manu, and then they'll only see the social aspects, and they'll miss the transcendental. So it's the same transcendental knowledge, but it's being given in this context, and so it becomes associated with the writer. But it's still the same knowledge that came from the Supreme Personality in the interaction with the devotees. It's the same knowledge. Because the point is Mother Jashoda, she stays in the house, makes the arrangements. If there's some problem, Nanda Baba goes out. That's the way it works. So then that is how the devotees are practicing it. Sage, God-given self-evident knowledge of the jivas is the source of the scriptures. Right? But that sages receive the self-evident knowledge from the Supreme Lord and recorded it for the benefit of the jivas. So that self-evident knowledge there has been recorded here. And therefore then we get all the rules on, okay, the father does this, the mother does this, the parents do this, the children do that, the teacher this, the students that, the administrators this, the citizens that. You know what I'm saying? So that's already going on in the spiritual world, the self-evident. You know what I'm saying? No one had to teach Mother Jashoda how to be Mother Jashoda. It's self-evident.
There was no seminar how to be Mother.
No, it's amazing, isn't it? Like that, there you go, like that game.
Does that make more of the scriptures of the different planets adjusted to the different...
Generally not so much, because what's written there is, you see what's in the Shastra, it's all spoken by all these great sages. But what will be on the different planets will be more detail. You know? Like that, because they can utilize it. They have a greater material ability, so therefore a more greater volume of detail is given, but in connection to the Lord. Like Narayana Kavacha, it's mentioned there that Indra put this on and chanted this mantra because it's all about Lord Narayan. But putting it on, human beings can't do it, right? Because they don't have the concentration and understanding of the how you know the creation works to be able to utilize it. Does that make sense? So there's more. It's not that it's different. It's the same thing, you know. More. It's more. I mean, I've heard it said that Yamaraj, his rendition of the Bhagavatam includes every pastime that the Lord did in every species. Right? Because he has to absorb himself in the 8,400,000 species of life. So this is what keeps him sane, is that he can see it in relationship to the Lord. But we only see a few. Right? But, you know, other personalities don't have all that. They may have some other aspects. Because the point is Bhagavatam's unlimited. Bhagavatam is the pastimes of the Lord with his devotees. Does that make sense? From the forefathers headed by Bhriga Muni and the other sons of Brahma appeared many children and descendants, right? So it said forefathers headed by Bhriga Muni and other sons of Brahma. These are the Prajapatis, right? So that's only forefathers. They're the Prajapatis, right? From them, then all the different species are coming down. So when you say you have a Gotra, it means what your line goes back to which one of Brahma's sons or grandsons. There's 21 Prajapatis. They all fit into sons or grandsons. Right? So those 21, if you're coming in Bharadvaj Gotra, it means it goes back that to like there. You know, or Gotama, it goes back to Gotama. Kasyapa, it goes back to Kasyapa. That's generally our lines, right? Because he gave birth to all the demons. Right? So we come in the Kasyapa line. Not so clear, but you know.
I just wanted to ask about these families. Like we see the example of the Pandavas. Queen Kunti, she was from the Moon dynasty, but now their contents are coming from the Surya dynasty, the Pandavas.
So is that a problem?
Is it because of their fathers were the demigods?
No. It just means that line goes back to the sun god. Right? It's coming in that line. Like Arjuna is also called Tapatya, because in the line, if you go way back, then the daughter of the sun god is also in the line. Right? So it means it comes down from the sun god, and the other comes down from the moon god. It's not. There's no analogy here. We mean it's come. That's where it comes from. From the forefathers headed by Bhriga Muni and other sons of Brahma appeared many children and descendants who assumed different forms as demigods, demons, human beings, Guhyakas, Siddhas, Gandharvas, Vidyadharas, Charanas, Kindevas, Kinaras, Nagas, Kimpurushas, and so on. All of the many universal species, along with their respective leaders, appeared with different natures and desires generated from the three modes of material nature. Therefore, because of the different characteristics of the living entities within the universe, there are many great Vedic rituals, mantras, and rewards. Right? It's being applied to all of them, because they all have different things, so everybody follows the Vedas. Right? So then, accordingly, then they have their specific rituals, mantras, and rewards. Yeah.
Would this refer only to the human species?
I mean,
like the Prajapati also populates animals and plants.
But the point is when was the last time you came across, you know, an animal from the 8 million species that was studying a scripture? You understand?
I mean, beside myself.
No, that's within the 400,000. There's the 400,000 that is said that only a few of the 400,000 are civilized. So you know what I'm saying? You know, so they're as good as animals, two-legged, but they're still counted within the variety of human species. You know what I'm saying?
Would the Prajapati also generate the animal species?
They generate the animal species, but the scriptures are written for the human species. So that means anyone within those 400,000 human species technically could follow them. But because of their particular interests, the modes, they may not be. So they will act as animals and end up with animal births in the next life. Though they technically have the potential to take up actual human life. You know what I'm saying? So that's the... Thus, due to the great variety of desires and natures among human beings, there are many different theistic philosophies of life, which are handed down through tradition, custom, and disciplic succession. So here, tradition means it's Shruti, Smriti, what the sages have given for a specific time, place, and circumstance like that. And that then, therefore, the customs of applying that, and then that coming down through the disciplic successions. But it still starts back with the great sages. There are other teachers who directly support atheistic viewpoints. Right? So all this, what he's described up to here, this is all theistic. Right? It's based on the Veda, it's understanding in that line, but there are also those who are atheistic. They don't see it in the connection of the Lord, or they don't even accept the Vedas. Right? So that's always been there. There has always been that class of men. Just that maybe there's an infestation these days, but before then it was more localized to forests and like that, hilltops, valleys, someplace. Okay. Does that make sense? So then we will see. Like Ayurveda, then we'll see that in connection with Charaka or Shushruta. These are different speakers, right? But the Veda itself, that knowledge is coming from the Lord, and it comes down through the lines. But they're the ones who document it for application, in a more systematic or more general way. Before everyone knew the knowledge, they could use it. To make it more accessible, then they document it. You know what I'm saying? So it's attributed to them. Like the Artha Shastra is attributed to Kautilya. But that Artha, that body of knowledge, has always been there. Does that make sense? So that's what may become seemingly elusive about when Vedas talk about the books of knowledge. The books of knowledge means the knowledge itself. Now, whether that is documented in a specific book or not, that's not the point. It's a particular kind of knowledge, a different aspect of the Veda.
It's a topic.
It's a topic, yeah. But the topic has all the knowledge in it. Now, then some sages, by their discussions, then a particular aspect of it, or some aspects of it, or the principles and some details of it, are then recorded. But otherwise, it goes on and on beyond that. It's just like now. Back in the 80s, I was talking with one Ayurvedic doctor. And he says that when you take the pulse, you're checking mucus, bile, and air. So that's three. So 3 times 3 is 9. Times 9 is 81. So he was saying that in his generation and before, they would take this and then calculate the balance based on 81. He says that nowadays many people are starting to use just 9. So the mucus, bile, and air, the mucus, bile, mucus, air. You understand, like that. So like this, but they would take each one of those and divide each one of those. So that way they could get very, very fine. Like nowadays they say, they ask you the symptoms. Before, they weren't supposed to. They just go in, I saw it takes the pulse like that and say, you have trouble sleeping at night when you sleep, your feet sweat, and these all these other things like this happen. You know, when you go to the toilet, this happens, and this happens when you eat, and the guy's, wow, how do you know all that stuff? Well, it's just right there in the pulse. You know? So that's the fineness. So nowadays it's hard to find, you understand, because they don't apply. Does that make sense? So so much is there. So what I'm meaning is that's 81. So you can take 81 times 81 also. Like yogasans, there's 32 main asans. Right? But if you know about scriptures talk about 100,000. But actually, there's one for every species of life. You know? But, you know, the detail and difference on how where you're looking is something between this mosquito asan and that mosquito asan, you know, may be so subtle you don't catch it, you know? So from 8,400,000, it's cut down to 100,000, which is cut down to 32. You understand? Does that make sense? So that's how it is. Is meaning that there's all this knowledge there, but depending upon the situation, then more or less is there. Yes.
Where it says that this knowledge has been lost, is that because of the inability to access it?
That's there. It's just time. Time goes. It says like, in any case, the annihilation will happen, and then the living entities are no longer interacting with the material energy. Right, so the time factor is not active, so therefore it's lost. So then, you know, and their memory is not that great, right? Because, you know, you're remembering dead matter, it's kind of unconscious, so the tendency is to slowly go unconscious. So then it's forgotten. So it has to be again spoken, again reintroduced. The knowledge itself is eternal, but its reintroduction is continuously happening. You know, because the creation can mean just at the end of each yuga. It can also mean that. It can mean at the end of a Manu, or it can mean at the end of a day of Brahma, or it means at the end of Brahma's life. So you have any of these. And even just with time, you see, is that someone's, you know, something's there, it's very clear, and then it gets lost. You know what I'm saying? They were talking about the elliptical order of the planets because of how it was, and the sun's here and the other things here, and so it has to go in an ellipse. They were already talking about this in 300 AD, right? But it's not till it didn't become a regular part of the science, Western science, until 1700 AD, 1400 years. It just disappeared. So things get lost. You know, Leonardo is talking about helicopters and airplanes and all these kinds of things. It was hundreds of years before people actually started making them. You know what I'm saying? You can imagine if he had made one of those, you know, what would have happened to him, you know? You know, they would have burnt him and his helicopter at the stake. You know? Does that make sense? So, like that, Anissa. Yes.
The first part of the statement here, would it refer to the Sadarshana, the six philosophies, and the other part, would it refer to this Nashtika philosophies like Buddhism, which are opposed?
The first part sentence of which? Of the last paragraph.
The philosophies of life.
Yeah, means that would be the six systems.
And those who are atheistic viewpoints would then be the Gnostic?
Yeah, basically, you could take that.
Buddhism.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, that would be one way to take it. Another is if you don't accept the element of Bhagavan, technically it's atheist. But, you know, we generally, in dealing with philosophy, keep it broad. So if it's based on the Vedas, then that's theistic. And if it's not, it's atheistic. Right? But when we're talking about the fine points of devotional service, so that one can understand what's actually devotional service and proper and not, then that gets into, we can define that as theistic and atheistic. Okay. due to the mixture of defective sense knowledge, many types of infidel doctrines have come into existence in the name of scriptures. Therefore, the self-evident knowledge, which is the universal acquisition of the jivas, must be followed as a standard in the studies and discussions of the scriptures. Right? So this is, remember, this is Bhakti Vinod Thakur here. Infidel doctrines.
Yes.
Thus, the independent cultivation of the self-evident knowledge is always necessary, since the self-evident knowledge itself is the origin of all the scriptures. Those who disregard the root and depend upon the branches cannot attain any well-being. Right? So this self-evident, this original knowledge, that is the knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and its relationship with the devotees, because as we said, here it starts off that the sages, the self-evident knowledge of the jiva is the source of the scriptures. The sages have received the self-evident knowledge and recorded it. Right? Yeah.
So, from this statement, we can imply that it has to be studied in parampara, in push, like in.
Yeah, because you approach the previous through your present acharya. But the point being made here is that you're approaching through your acharya, but you have to study what is the original fundamental philosophy. Right? Like that. Because otherwise, if we only look at, it's just like you notice when we're getting into, when the acharyas are breaking up the particular topic into these three parts, right? The universal element, and then the specific breakdowns of that in application, right? Like you have the jiva, and then you have the liberated jiva and the condition, right? But the jiva, that doesn't change whether you're liberated or not, right? So devotional service then is generic, you know, definition that always applies, whether it's sadhana or whether it's in the you know, liberated state, right? That, so when we read that, we're all comfortable. Be very happy class is over. Everybody's enthusiastic today. Swept away. No, it's just the end of the class. We're going to do the same thing.
We need full ones.
10,000 amps. Okay, so, what are we talking about? Now, we notice when the generic is being given, we have no problem. When the application of devotional service into the condition stage is being discussed, we have no problem. But when pure, unalloyed devotional service in its pure state, no consideration of conditioning is described, we have problem. Every sentence someone raises their hand. No, but you can engage your family in devotional service. No, everything has to be given up, only Krishna. No, but you can engage all your attachment. We'll constantly do that, right? You remember when we were going through it? That's what was going on. So that's what he's meaning here, is that you have to cultivate this self-evident knowledge along with whatever else you're doing. Otherwise, we tend to just cultivate that which applies to our situation, and that's it. And then from that, then we figure we've got it all worked out, everything's fine. And so, though it's progressive, it's not dynamic. But if you know, okay, I'm here, I'm comfortable that, you know, I can engage where I am now in Krishna's service by this method, then you're comfortable with it. But unless you remember what is pure unalloyed devotion, you know, and that's based on your desire for it, while the other is based on your engaging the conditioning in the Lord's service, you know, going through that process to give up the result and use the knowledge properly and all these different things. You understand? So that makes it dynamic. You know? So this can also mean what the Upanishads say, vidyam cha, vidyam cha. Right? Does that make sense? Knowledge and ignorance are studied together. It didn't make sense. No, vidyam cha, vidyam cha. Cha avidya. So it becomes, that's just the way the Upanishad works. Okay. Does that make sense? So the two have to be studied together. So the knowledge that fits for your situation now, that has to be studied so you can apply it. But the knowledge of where you're trying to get to, that also has to be studied. Otherwise, how do you know you get there? So the problem comes is one group will study one and one group will study another.
Yeah.
And they fight. But the point is you have to have them both. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura ki.